This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series. Time to get going in the second half, in that case, and I'm delighted to say that thanks to a fault in the space-time continuum, our first reader has fallen through and will be our second reader. So it's my great pleasure to introduce Mr. Will Loram.
Thanks. I have to make a couple of apologies. First of all, being late and the fact that there was a sort of family issues and sort of being in another country. so it was a quick dash over from Wales. Secondly, I had been looking for my get-up because the book is Armchair Hero, written by Ugel, W-G-W-L. And basically, the author is a demigod from planet Glob. So, being planet Glob, I think we ought to sort of enlighten you a bit about what this planet is. So, essentially, there's a lot of bits that are similar to planet Earth, but there are a lot of bits that aren't. One of the major parts is that heaven and hell are, you can actually go to the top of the world and see heaven, go to the bottom of the world and see hell, which in fact is called Merk. And the bit I'm going to read to you, it's quite a long way into the book. Basically, I'll fill you in a bit. First of all, the hero is called Ferzel, and he's a security guard to heaven, which has been reduced down in numbers, and by computer error, instead of being a hunking great beefcake, he's the thin and weedy nut gatherer mystic who's accidentally been sort of appointed as a security guard for heaven. The forces of evil from Merk go and invade heaven, and he's sent by the top god Hap to go and save the world. And to do this, he's given a comfy chair which does lots of exciting things like fly, with a large pair of wings, and has lots of interesting stuff down in its side, and also the last surviving war bird called a Bobo. It's a bit of a know-it-all, but that's his companion, and he's given he's told to go off to Loot, which is the pirate capital of Glob, and go and recruit pirates to go and save the world, attack Merk, and then get everything back to normal. And so he's basically recruited these pirates, who happen to be ex-pirates, because all the sea has actually gone away from Loot. And so all the pirate boats were stuck in the mud, and with nowhere to go, they became a little island of pacifists. And only those who retrenched pirates who knew no better were sent into rehab. And so Ferzel went and recruited a whole load of ex-pirates from rehab. They got down to the seafront and the quay, and they managed to adapt a pirate galley into a flying pirate ship. So here we have a flying pirate ship with balloons inflated by over-large bean feast. So corny jokes about sort of lots of hot air, and they got them up into the air. These comfy chairs installed into the galley with large flappy wings, and they're on their way to Merk to attack Merk and get the world back onto where it should be. So we're in chapter 23, and this is where we dig in. The deck of the good ship Rover Woof Woof was awash with good spirits as it bobbed at anchor amongst the clouds. Knockout Punch was a particular spirit in question, and the couple of beakers of brew that Ferzel had been persuaded to drink in toast to open traditional Loot Pirates raid committee was not helping his concentration. Tradition has a lot to answer for, and in the case of the pirate raids around the shores of Glob, It was a surprisingly democratic tradition. Every member of the crew had a democratic right to vote for any plan of attack. What was to be attacked and when to attack. As this had always been written into any piratical contract, it was taken as read that these practices applied, even when none of the pirates entering into the contract could read. The nuisance of democratic processes had traditionally been overcome by the more ambitious captains through the age-old universal political device of bribery. A couple of barrels of knockout punch was usually all it took to incapacitate any independent reasoning by any difficult member of a crew. Usually the thought process of putting one foot in front of the other was severely damaged, let alone anything more complicated. By the time the sea bandits had emptied the barrels of punch and had woken up with a fully orchestrated headache, the captain would inform them of what they had voted to do in great detail. That was another tradition. Fazel had not quite grasped the essence of this decision-making process. Right, he said, and cleared his throat through a megaphone. Him. Now, let's have a show of hands for Plan 22A. The plan for attack of Castle Gloom, if all other plans failed. No abstentions and no voting partners on this time, if you please. A ragged chorus of loud guffaws and heckling drifted from the sprawled figures in their deck chairs. Run through that one again, shouted Groggy between belches. Cackled Croc excitedly, thumping his walking frame on the deck for emphasis. With a growl of approval from the rest of the crew, except for Peg, who managed a loud purr, Fazel sighed and picked up the pile of parchment sheaves marked Plan 22A in big writing. What's the score so far? He asked the Bobo. Sorry, that was wrong voice. What's the score so far? He asked the Bobo, who was acting as official boats recorder. Bobo is the warbird. We've got a tie for plans 1 to 15, all scoring maximum points with a recount of 19 and a review of the situation on plan 21 after spoiled ballot papers. Fazel exhaled loudly and steadying his feet on the gently rocking deck of the galley as it bobbed on hot bean air balloons, he lifted the megaphone to his lips again. The plan for attack of Castle Gloom if all other plans failed, he shouted. Louder! Can't hear in the back! Daisy bawled as she sipped delicately from the bucket of punch, which had been passed incorrectly from her right-hand side. But no one cared by that stage about the niceties of traditions of serving drinks. As the day dragged itself into existence up to the gates of Merc, it seemed to be much like its predecessors. As with most days for these unlucky enough to be posted at the entrance of Merc, boredom reigned supreme. Goblins picked their noses as they shuffled paperwork. Imps on duty could be lucky if they got anyone passing through customs during an active month. And the dragons made unpleasant smells in their stables between snores. As a demon dragon squadron slept in unison at their post. If a demon had any sense of aesthetics, those serving out a posting at immigration control would not be terribly impressed by their lot. A grumpy collection of huffy hills piled up into the decidedly unattractive Vom Mountains on mountains range. On the plateau of the tallest and ugliest mound of Dandruff's Cree, a series of squat and featureless buildings huddled under a large gargoyle-infested concrete gateway bearing the legend, "Prepare for your fall from grace. You are now in Merc." "Up to your necks in it," was scrawled on the bottom of the sign, but as all the guards were literate, they took no notice of it. Behind the onyx and anthracite gates stretched a tar-dressed monumental stairway, helpfully labelled the Stairway of Damnation. In front of the gates stood sentinel booths and turnstiles. Here bored imps lurk to check the passports of any creature of murk returning from a bit of mischief making, havoc recreation, or just breaking out to have a bit of fun in the happening cities of Glob. The arid trickle of traffic probably did not need to be checked out and checked back in again, but they were. And it was the job of slothful imps to be pernickety about dubious visas and return passes of the travellers. Contradictory signs pointed to different booths, making it a multiple choice decision as to whether a busking poltergeist would classify himself as a heinous and horrible murk resident, or general trouble, or even antisocial detritus inhabitant of murk. Whatever channel they chose, there was no automatic way through to the outside world and a view of Von Peaks. There was always the compulsory detention, strip search, interrogation, and a bit of ritual torment. That was just to get out. To get back into Merck, there was the compulsory confiscation of any souvenirs that might give pleasant thoughts, followed by a period of festering in the quarantine pound until considered vile enough to fit into Merck again. A short muck-slinging distance from the quarantine cages lay a small landing strip where a dragon squadron flew the occasional routine patrol in the exclusion zap zone over the Vom mountain peaks. Their task was to ensure that nothing that ought not to approach the gates of doom. As not many beings in their right mind, apart from the occasional over-adventurous package tour, thought that a visit to Merck was anything more than an unattractive proposition, the demon pilots blatted whatever was silly enough to move. It also relieved the boredom, and they were well and truly bored. Boredom reigned supreme with apathy, sloth and tedium installed as chief ministers in mean jerry-built shacks of the Dragon Squadron camp. In an unlit corner of an office marked Squadron Chief Basher, a telephone jangled into life. A string of oaths erupted from another corner where the burly figure of Bruiser, the Chief Basher, had been so bored that he was earning his cap badge. The telephone's shrill bell took the demon so much by surprise that he had ironed most of his fingers before he registered to yell in pain. On any other occasion, he would have kicked his obsequious goblin gopher to answer the infernal ringing, but he remembered that he had suspended his kickable assistant from the toenails above the ever-boiling kitchen cauldron for a bit of a lark. Throwing the iron out of the window, the Bruiser grabbed the receiver. "What do you want?" he roared. The voice at the other end told him, and Bruiser's face immediately turned sickly grey. The dashing, bushy moustache, favoured by the pilots of the Dragon Squadron, drooped and quivered as he held the receiver away from his burning ear. "No. Yes, sir. General disaster. Absolutely, General. No, of course. Always unprepared. The worst condition possible. Combat readiness? The 22nd Dragon Squadron is always prepared for a general disaster. Understood. And will all ensure that my dragon aces leave no traces of any general disaster. Film it." Bruiser, the chief basher of 22 Squadron, Dragon Squadron, sucked at his throbbing, recently ironed hand. "A crew is on its way. Well, I'm not sure I can swear a dragon for a bunch of wimpy. In that case, one of my worst fiery beasts will be available so the Dark Lord can enjoy the worst day's entertainment ever recorded." The receiver went dead. Bruiser cradled it in his good hand for a moment and then threw it against the wall with all the force he could muster. Instead of it disintegrated into 1,000 broken pieces, the demon-proof phone, standard military issue to withstand the tantrums of service personnel, bounced back onto the desk with a quick thring and settled back to sleep again. "Soap, pumice stones and extra white detergent," the chief basher swore as he kicked down the office door and stormed along the corridor, kicking holes in the plasterwork as he went. "Sergeant, scramble alert! Briefing 5 minutes in the stables, he bellowed, lashing out at recumbent bodies as he waded through the offices. Where's that no good to be damned little basher? Set up all dragons, he screeched as he knocked two sleepy-headed demons together and booted them through a window. Five armed with mucklaser missiles, the rest splat guns and bomb bombs, they heard as they landed in the grey ash parade ground and scampered off to the dragon bays in the stables. This is going to be vile, Bruiser thought to himself as he burst into the ops room and set about slapping all the snoring operators awake and then bopped them on the head again for good measure. On the radar screen, a static blot beeped patiently. The blood-red eyes of the dashing dragon squadron commander glazed over as Bruiser snarled in anticipation. Strains of a jolly ditty sailed upwards into the billowing clouds as all aboard the Rover Woof Woof they bawled out the refrain of a traditional loot raiding song, conducted theatrically under the frilly handkerchief of Captain Cuthbert. All apart from a gangly youth, a giant, and a brightly plumed bird of war. These three were huddled over a pile of parchment slips, sorting them into piles, which were then counted individually.
Right, that should be the lot,
said Boak, licking his pencil stub with an air of finality.
As temporary counting officer in this election, I can declare that, including soiled voting slips and some people have been very dirty, we have a dead heat between plans 7 and 15.
Fezzel groaned. The Bobo ruffled its feathers in sympathy. Not again. Look at them. You won't be able to get a sensible vote out of them in the state they are in. That is the third time they have sung that verse and it has been a different tune every time. Big Gallup is wearing his deck chair as a hat and the masked marauder has been flat on his back and out for the count for the last three recounts. Fersal moaned miserably. Seems a complete waste of time. No good asking troops for what they would like to do. Gotta tell them, especially if it's a dirty job. This democracy thing will never catch on, the Bobo said, wagging his horrible head in exasperation. But it's tradition. They won't attack Merc without a proper democratic vote, Fergil said. In their state, they won't know if they voted at all by the time they have had some sense in them, sniffed the Bobo. Boak was about to say something about democracy when something else struck him.
Bandits,
said Boak, pointing to a line of little black dots in the sky.
Bandits, 11 o'clock, he said for emphasis.
The Bobo had got the gist of the situation and had hopped down the main hatch to start up the comfy chair into emergency flight mode and get some speed on.
Prepare to repel borders,
Boak shouted. Prepare to repel borders, Fezzel questioned incredulously.
Repel borders, shouted Groggy, snapping out of his knockout punch-induced doze on his deck chair.
And to prove that he'd been wide awake all the time, he shot off two pistols into the air at nothing in particular. Unfortunately, the nothing in particular where the shots passed through happened to be, in particular, two balloons that had been so carefully inflated by Croc's chronic digestive system and had until that moment been keeping the galley afloat among the clouds. Diving for cover, Boak was just about to shout out the warning,
"There be dragons!"
as three of the fiery beasts screamed down in bomb runs, with spear-wielding demons yodeling ferociously on their backs. Before the words could get out of his mouth, two large explosions rent the air and the galley suddenly lurched into a plummet and disappeared into a cloud as three deadly bomb bombs whistled harmlessly overhead. Flapping at idle in his tactical position of as high above the target zone as possible without losing sight of the enemy, the squadron chief Basher swore by the great dung beetle and all its unsanitary works. Not only had the
had the target disappeared in a miraculous evasion manoeuvre, but he had just watched three of his fighters being frazzled as they flew into two balls of fire. Bruiser cursed again as they dropped out of the sky and crashed into the Vom mountainsides. "This is not fair!" he screamed into the wind, desperately wanting to hit something. His headphones crackled with the repeated reports of the flying galley's magical disappearance and the terminal fate of Blue Wing. "All wings, repeat, all wings, stop this holy babble and find the target. I want that flying pleasure palace blown to smithereens. I want it in pieces. I want nothing to remain. And if there is any pilot who fails to do his duty, they will be strung up by the horns, disemboweled and fed morsel by morsel to a colony of carnivore ants. No questions, just do it and do it now." Wrenching at the reins of his mount, he put the dragon into a deep, steep dive, heading for the cloud where the galley had disappeared. The two demons keeping station on his wings kicked their dragons into maximum revs and, forming a V formation, plummeted into a screaming dive and hoped they would find whatever they were looking for. That's the end of that chapter.
Oh, there's a cliffhanger to end on. Thank you very much, Will. We'll now take another short break, and in about 5 minutes' time, we'll be back to put our readers to the question.
Bristol Con Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the Bristol Con Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.